Governor Ted Armstrong.
America. Law enforcement agencies are alarmed. Police chiefs are deeply concerned. They're worried about it. Something has to be done, they say, or their very society will come crumbling apart. Our very way of life, our culture, replaced by a jungle-like subculture of personal anarchy, a reverting to clubs and fists and knives, a complete breakdown in all order, law, authority, morality, and respect for the rights and the properties of others. But why, people want to know, what causes crime and what's happening to us? Why such outbreaks of violence? Why is it we can find how to put a man on the moon, but not how to keep him out of jail? How is it with all of our vaunted achievements of science and technology, we still don't understand much about our own human nature? How is it we can say people are educated when they go to study all types of criminal psychology, psychiatry, and to try to study the human mind, and yet they still do not know the real ultimate cause of crime? Why does an ordinary citizen, otherwise a fairly law-abiding, respectful, everyday Joe citizen, suddenly in a rage of bestial anger, snatch a gun and kill virtually everyone in sight? Why senseless mass murders? We're living in the era of sensational crimes, and people really enjoy those sensational crimes. That's what makes you sick to your stomach about it. They really do enjoy them. There's a bizarre sense of sort of a satisfaction of reading about it and hearing about it when a senseless, bestial crime occurs. Now, you're living in the era of mass murders, like the sniper atop the tower on the University of Texas at Austin that was so famous some months back. The time of the assassinations of presidents. The assassination of President Kennedy some years ago, and then the assassination of the Prime Minister of South Africa, Verwoerd. And we hear of other attempts on lives. Recently, the arrest of certain ones in Berlin who had been plotting the assassination, apparently, so it was said in the press, of Hubert Humphrey. And on it goes. I'll tell you what our mail says about it in just a few moments, because it's going to make you sick to your stomach when you... Well, I'll tell you right now, what I'm talking about is a letter I got from an elderly lady who lives in Austin, Texas, and here's what she said. Now, this is going back a while in history about this mass murder that occurred there. She said, quote, "You are so right about people. I have a friend who lives across the street from where Whitman lived and killed his wife." This was the former Marine Corps person who had a grudge against all society and committed those mass murders with all the rifles and so on atop that tower on the University of Texas campus. And I don't care where you are and what country, you probably heard about it because that was sensationalized around the world. But here's what happened afterward. Could people leave it alone? Do people enjoy this type of thing? Do they want to wallow in the morass of it? Are they just about as curious as a pack of chickens in the barnyard, gawking at where the grain is? Listen to this letter, and it ought to make you sick. This is disgusting to the nth degree. "I have a friend," said this elderly lady, "who lives across the street from where Whitman lived and killed his wife. She had to leave her home as the cars in an endless chain would drive by. She is an old lady like myself in our 70s. Isn't that dumbfounding? People read an address in the paper about where a vicious murder took place. They say, oh boy, I'd sure like to see the scene of that crime. Hey, why don't we just drive by just out of curiosity and kind of look at the front porch and the address and see what kind of a yard it was and let our minds imagine how this murder must have taken place. Won't that be exciting?" Isn't that almost incredible? How do you figure people in long lines, driving by to gawk at the scene of a crime? Isn't that one of the most dumbfounding little tidbits of idiocy you've ever heard in your life? Well, why say more? That disgusts me so much that I wish I could say something beyond what I'm capable of saying and maybe change people's minds and their lives. But I know that that's not going to happen. And I know that as sure as I say that, I'm not going to make a huge stand in society where you live or anywhere else, and I'm not going to change it. But I am telling you, there is a reason for crime. There's a cause for crime, and there's a cause for the absence of it. We're not ignorant of cause and effect. There is a reason for all of this mounting crime. There is a purpose being worked out on this earth and among and between societies. And there's a reason in human life. And there is a reason why all these mass murders and senseless shootings are occurring. And there's a cause. But it seems that even the leading law enforcement agencies do not understand that cause. Now, you can understand it. And don't get all excited and decide that I'm pretending to know more than all the rest of law enforcement put together. But I do have a source of information that, in the main, many of these people do not know much about. The source of information about human nature itself. Now, we've entered this era of mass murders. Snipers killing every human in sight until they themselves are killed. Preoccupation, in the meantime, with the rights of criminals. I heard on the news recently that, well, first of all, the alleged, and here is a funny thing that you have to say, well, okay, I'll comply with it. The alleged killer of all these nurses in Chicago was on trial. And the one witness to the crime who had cowered in abject, mind-chilling terror under that bed as these knifings and stabbings one after another went on had testified that this speck was indeed the murderer and that she recognized him. Now the news report went like this, that the appointed counsel for the defense now was going to try to destroy her testimony. And I looked to my wife and I said, what? Why? Why would he try to destroy her testimony? Why don't both of them just try to get the facts? Is the man guilty? Maybe there is honest doubt. Maybe they don't know. So why don't both of them try to get the actual facts, the tangible evidence? Why try to destroy one person's testimony? Why not try to get other testimony, additional facts, additional knowledge? Instead of deliberately deciding, I don't care whether the guy is innocent or guilty. I have been assigned to try to prove that he's innocent. It doesn't matter to me. Apparently the reasoning goes that he is innocent or guilty. But what I'm going to have to do is to make up my mind that like a closed-minded, bigoted person would in a sort of a debate where it doesn't matter that you're trying to get at a point of truth or not. That's not the point. What you're trying to do is to win the argument. Whether the argument is right or wrong doesn't even enter into it. And so here's this news statement that he is going to attempt to destroy this person's testimony. Well, it's a little hard. I view it as the average layman, like a lot of other people do. I'm not skilled in jurisprudence. I'm not a lawyer. I read the papers like everybody else. And, of course, I only believe a part of what I read in the papers because once in a great while I even see an article about me, and I've never been quoted straight yet. And so I tend to be a little bit suspicious sometimes of news reporting because I find that sometimes there are slits between the pen and the paper and between the typewriter and the press, and I don't know how it happens, neither do you, but it happens. Now, amazingly, in this era of mass murders, people seem to want to wallow in it. They seem to rejoice in it. They seem to enjoy it. It sells newspapers. It makes copy for motion pictures and television serials. It's the type of thing that people want to see. And in the midst of all of these mass murders, we have, it seems, a preoccupation in this free nation, in the United States and other countries too, with the rights of criminals turning hardened killers loose because they committed the crime in front of too many people. Or maybe the freeing murderers because they weren't told that they did not need to confess. What on earth is happening to our society? You know, our mail is filled with statements about crime and people and their own personal involvement in it. They hear the World Tomorrow program. They hear what I say about crime and the mounting crime. Once in a great while, somebody will come and tell me or write a letter and say, oh, crime's not any worse than it ever was. Well, forget about them. They may believe the world is flat, too, but forget about them. But other people, they know crime is worse and growing, and they believe the statistics. And then once in a while, they see it about themselves, and it really hits home. For instance, here is a letter that I got from a woman in a Midwestern town in Illinois. She said a few years ago, this town was a quiet farm country town. Suddenly, it seems, crime and blatant defiance of law have grown out of proportion to the size of the town, approximately 50,000 population. Nearly every single day, there are numerous reports of vandalism and robbery. There has been an alarming increase in shootings, many involving families where one member kills or wounds another. Lately, she said, it's been a risk to travel the interstate highway near our town. There have been reports of snipers on the overhead bridges, and two cars were hit, but fortunately there was no accident. She said not only bullets are flying at the cars, rocks are being thrown from the bridges, and this resulted in an accident. A rock thrown from one of the bridges crashed through the windshield of a woman's car, and the fact that she was wearing sunglasses saved her eyes. Well, on and on it goes. The mail that we get talks about it, too. But some of the statistics are, well, they're virtually unbelievable. For instance, did you know, as I repeated on the last program twice, so you'd be sure to get it, and Attorney General Ramsey Clark is the one who reported this and urged Congress in his campaign to restrict the sale of guns in doing so. Did you know that since 1900, more Americans, by almost a third more, have been killed by guns in the United States than all Americans who have been killed in all the nation's wars from the Revolutionary War up to the time of the latest kill statistics of Vietnam? I bet you didn't know that. You know, that's a shocking statistic, isn't it? As I said the last time, I wanted to repeat it twice because it's so shocking. To think, and hear the actual figures, that 750,000 Americans, 750,000 Americans have been killed by guns in the United States compared to 530,000 Americans killed in all the wars, the Revolutionary War, the Spanish-American War, the War of 1812, the Civil War. Every war, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam, you name them. Every war, from the Revolutionary War to now. And we, in this affluent country of ours, this free nation of ours, this nation that is supposedly founded upon the principles of human decency and the respect for the lives and the property of others, have managed to kill more of our own selves than all foreign aggressors, attackers, or antagonists in any war since this country became a nation. Now, that's a fantastic enough statistic that why go on with it? It certainly is an amazing indictment against our peoples and the fact that something very, very sick and very wrong is eating away at the vitals of our nation. Now, the National Crime Commission released a report showing that state and local governments are spending about $1 billion a year keeping convicts locked up. That report was prepared by Dr. Elmer K. Nelson, who was University of Southern California professor of public administration. And Nelson said he was surprised at the large number of persons moving through the prison system every year, more than 2,500,000, and many of them repeat offenders. And what is shocking about it, there's a lot of crime in America, much worse than you ever thought, and far more than is ever reported, as a matter of fact, and far more crime than is ever solved, as a matter of fact. Far too much for anything you could call the health of the nation. But the fact is that when you look at who is doing it all, who is guilty of the crime, the most important single insight into this grim crime rate is the fact that more 15-year-olds are arrested for index crimes, primarily theft, than any other age group in the nation. Who is committing the crime? A preponderant proportion of all crimes are committed by teenagers, and the leading age bracket, 15. 16-year-olds run a close second. In the crimes of violence category, people 18 to 24 lead. When you begin to realize that about 56, I think it is, I'll have to check it, but I know it's well more than 50% of the total population are under voting age, you begin to realize the unbelievable and the serious proportions of these crime statistics. Now, the next surprise, much of this youthful crime, not in the slums, not in the big city streets, not in the tenement house districts or the proverbial spawning and hotbed areas of crime such as the slum districts of the big cities. Oh, no, not at all. Suburbia. Of all the crimes in the United States last year, the greatest number were committed by 15-year-old boys, and the percentage of these boys, about one-tenth as many girls, incidentally, who came from reasonably affluent homes located in the suburbs, sprouting across the nation, was almost as surprising as their age. And the fact is that crime in suburban areas is growing twice as fast as in the great cities surrounded by these lawn-dotted bedrooms of the metropolis and the swarming streets and ghettos of New York, Chicago, Detroit, Los Angeles, etc., and other huge urban centers still spawn double the serious crime rate of suburbia. It's still double the rate But the proportion is changing. The ratio is changing every single year. Now, for instance, in a sprawling suburban county, which is jammed up against New York City, it's estimated that 1 out of 6 juveniles, you drive by any street, you take a look at them, 1 out of 6 of these kids have experimented with marijuana, heroin, LSD, or some other narcotic, or a pill, or sniffing glue, or cough syrup with a kick to it. And now, a real worry by the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare is the delinquency rate among girls, and how in 1965 that rate rose more than 16 times as fast as it did among the boys. Now, Mrs. Catherine B. Ettinger, who is chief of the department's Children's Bureau, said, "We're particularly alarmed by the fact that so large a percentage of girls are involved in sex offenses." She said the number of girls' delinquency cases increased by 8% in 1965, while the number of boys' cases increased by less than one-half of 1%. And she said the increase in girls' cases in urban areas was 13%. Well, on and on it goes. What more can you say about it? Those statistics are about as shocking as they can get. But maybe a little more sickening than all that is the fact of how many of them are being let go. And in many areas, in Chicago, for example, citizens are even thinking and talking about forming vigilante gangs to protect themselves because they simply can't get the protection they demand. They're going to arm themselves. Murders in big cities are jumping by figures like 146%. That's the figure for Seattle, Washington. A jump of 146% in murders since 1960 in only 6 years. And it's bad enough to be run down by an automobile in an accident, you might say. But what about when other passers-by continue to drive past you, and then finally teenagers come up and rob your inert body before the ambulance can arrive? And what about the woman? It happened to Mrs. Lillian Tollefson in Seattle. She was struck by an automobile. Then the motorist backed up and took another run at her and hit her again. And then he got out of his car and stole her purse and fled on foot. And then they found the car was stolen. And then what about this dying man who was lying there seriously injured and died later beside his wrecked automobile? He'd gotten in an accident, single car accident. So while he was lying there, teenagers pulled up and stopped and stripped his automobile and left his body lying there. It wasn't until later that the body was removed. Well, what about some of these statistics? What do you say about that kind of an attitude? Well, my friends, I'm going to tell you exactly where it comes from and what's happening with us today. Because these very times were, believe it or not, prophesied in your Bible. Now, you might say, well, I don't believe in Bible prophecy. Well, I don't care whether you believe in it or not. It's a fact. And it's true, and it's happening. And there is a cause for crime, and that cause is revealed in the Bible, which is the book about human nature. And human nature, believe it or not, and I'm going to make this as a shocking statement, and I will back it up, human nature itself is criminal. Human nature is criminal. I'll make a further statement, and I'll prove it to you. It is a crime to be carnal and to be just an average person with average human nature. That's a crime. That's against the law. Because there is a law against human nature. Now, you know, you look at some of the statements of world leaders like Ruth Font that says, what element is still lacking that with all of our technological advances, we still can't learn to live together? I paraphrase in my words what he said. And you begin to realize how many great lofty leaders of law enforcement agencies and people who are statesmen on world levels who deal with law enforcement on the world peace through law movement, people who sit in high seats in the United Nations, who talk about human nature and why it is humankind cannot get along together. And then you begin to realize there is something deeply wrong with human nature, that human nature is, as I've said in this program time again in its basic elements, these four things. It is vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed. And you can summarize human nature by saying human nature is absolutely criminal. Now, here is a prophecy that absolutely slices right down through the grain and tells you exactly the kind of a society in which you would be living today. Let's see whether or not you can believe this Bible prophecy, regardless as to what you think about all the other ones. Here's 2 Timothy, the 3rd chapter, in verse 1, that says this: "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves." That's anarchy in its extreme. Preoccupied with the rights of yourself, with your own lusts, your own desires, your own jealousies, your own personal greeds, your own desires, your own pleasures, your grasping, greedy, selfish, sort of introspective, vanity-filled purpose that is all wrapped up in hyper-egotism and self. It says men shall be lovers of their own selves, and they are. And it says, verse 2 of 2 Timothy 3, covetous. Coveting everything, lusting after more, wanting to find the will-o'-the-wisp pot at the end of the rainbow that they never do achieve, wanting to get it real quick, wanting to run into a bank with a gun and seize money, a lot of dirty, filthy paper, and coveting the things that money can buy. Women, booze, fun. What kind of fun is it when you're wondering what moment a detective is going to walk up and speak your name and jam a gun in your side? It's happening to people today anyhow. Their lust is hanging out like a giant inflated bag of unbelievable vanity and greed. It says boasters. Now, you've never heard anybody boast much, have you? Well, it depends on whether you've listened to many political campaigns, I suppose, or depends on how many public spokesmen and speeches you've heard. How many neighbors you've talked to, I guess, about their exploits. How many fish and hunting stories you've heard, I suppose. How many sports personalities you've heard interviewed. I don't know. Do you ever hear any boasting? Why, isn't the very element of human nature boastful? Of exalting ourselves and trying to put down the other person? Of trying to talk about how great and how good and how filled with accomplishment we are and how everything is our way. You know, you sit in a restaurant, you overhear a conversation in the next booth. What do you hear? Why, every individual is just... Now, I said this and she said that, and I don't think she should have that kind of attitude. Besides, here's another reason why she was wrong. Isn't that the way people reason continually? They make themselves right and everybody else is wrong. Human nature is a sinful, lustful, greedy, jealous, vanity-filled, wretched mess. Human nature is carnal in the extreme. Human nature is criminal. It has a criminal bent to it. And it's against the law. God's law, as I will show you. Now this prophecy went on to say, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, and juvenile delinquency is increasing by leaps and bounds. Unthankful. Oh yes, are we ever. People are ingrates, absolutely unthankful for the great benefits and the blessings they've been given, and instead of getting on their knees and saying, thank you, my Father in heaven, for life, for my very heartbeat and the precious breath of air that I take into my lungs, for this experience of life, this journey called life, for the enjoyment of everything that I have, why, they think they've earned it themselves, like they deserve it, like they have something coming for nothing, like somehow the world owes them a living. Without natural affection, he says. Isn't that a fact? Plenty of the unnatural kind, perverse kind, rotten, hideous, unbelievable, bestial atrocities, sex perversions, homosexuality, sadism, brutal crimes, but not very much of the natural, warm, loving, neighborly affection, a tender concern for other human beings, a warm smile for their children, a deep outgoing concern for their problems and their own personal way of life and their shortcomings and a desire to help. Not much of that around anymore, is there? It says in verse 3, truce breakers. How many people do you know whose word you can trust? How many used car salesmen do you know whose word you can trust? What about insurance salesmen? What about clerks? What about the butcher and the baker? And, as they say, the candlestick maker? Anybody you talk to, you don't trust. They see somebody sitting, so to speak, as we used to say in the vernacular, on a stack of Bibles and then raising his hand. And what do you do that for? You could raise your ear, or I suppose raise your eyebrows, or stand on one leg. But he raises his hand, and he swears, which Christ says don't ever do, to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help him, and on and on and on. And everybody in the whole courtroom proceeds to doubt and be utterly suspicious of every word that comes out of his mouth. Are you living in a time of truce breaking? Well, what about the truce between North and South Korea? What about all the truces we know of as a matter of documentary historical evidence that have been signed and entered into as agreements between nations. Now, do we live in a time of out-and-out lies? You know, you see these two captured Americans? Did you see that picture appeared in the paper recently? And they were being interviewed by the North Vietnamese, and it was said in the North Vietnamese papers that they had confessed to murderous atrocities against civilians of deliberately dropping napalm. And it was a motion picture. But there was just one problem that these lying North Vietnamese forgot about. You see, deaf people can read other people's lips. And so they got some experts in the field, and they had them sit and watch these men, and they could write every word they said. And what they were doing was answering simple questions about their families, about their unit, about what ship they were from, and their rank, and their desire to return home. And every time they began to even mention something about how careful they were to avoid dropping a bomb in any place that they had not been specifically instructed to, other than a military objective, whack, the film was cut, there was an interruption in it, and then it continued with some other casual statement. And that was read by lip-reading experts that were assigned by the government. You know, when you see this type of activity, I don't care whether it's between little kids on the sand pile, whether it's between neighbors, whether it's between the housewife and the grocer, or whether it's between great, exalted statesmen on an international level. This world is shot through with a lot of rotten evil. This is a rotten, filthy world, a carnal, wretched world, a hideous, crime-filled world. It needs to get itself changed. It needs to get itself converted. It needs to get itself a complete rejuvenation. It needs to have crime removed, and the only way you're going to remove crime is to remove the cause of it. And the cause of it is human nature. And human nature is a dirty, rotten crime. And you can repent of that crime, and you can have your nature changed. But only if you'll bow your stiff neck and your stiff knees and get on your knees and call out to your Creator and seek Him while He may be found. Only if you'll get rid of your antagonisms, your resentments against the old practice pseudo-formalism of sanctimonious religion with its dying swan song of prayers and organ music and twittering voices, and begin to realize Jesus Christ of Nazareth was all man and a yard wide and bared his back and gave his life's blood for you, and he's not dogging your steps and trying to get you to do something and wear a certain kind of clothes or give up something. He's just trying to help you and straighten out your life and maybe protect you from criminals too. Well, I've got to break off. I wish I had an hour now that I'm just getting started, but I'll have to continue next time. And in the meantime, if you want a booklet that will show you one of the great causes of juvenile delinquency, then write in for this booklet on the plain truth about child rearing. And also, if you want a booklet about laws and how to apply them, then write for this booklet on the Ten Commandments. And if you want a preview into the world the way it's going to be and when crime is going to be absent, then write for the booklet by the title of this program, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. And it's all free of charge and no price if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Listen next time. I'll continue on this same subject. Until then, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.